What Amazon would have done, they would have gone into New York, they would have gone there, and they wouldn't have talked to anybody, and they would have just done it. And they wouldn't have cared. So the fact that they are now caring and interacting, Amazon people are going to hate this, but it speaks to day two at Amazon.
Whoa. Oh my God. Did you just go
there? I just went there.
Hey, welcome to GeekWire. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
I'm civic editor Monica Nicholsberg.
And I'm John Cook, co-founder of GeekWire.
All right, so some big news to talk about today. Amazon, in a stunning reversal, announced that it will not be building half of HQ2 in New York City after facing opposition from the community there. Certain elements of the political leadership did not want Amazon to go to New York City. Monica, you've been covering this. What does it mean?
This story, man, I've been covering this for more than a year, and every time something breaks, it's more wild than the thing before it. I don't know what's going to be next. They're going to build it on the moon or something. But yes, so Amazon pulled out of its New York plans. This was going to be a 25,000 to 40,000 person office in Queens. And in New York, Amazon has been facing a lot of opposition, very vocal opposition from elected officials and labor leaders. And some community activists that they just didn't want to contend with anymore, especially when compared to Northern Virginia, where they've been welcomed very warmly.
So, Monica, you went to Northern Virginia and to Queens right before the HQ2 announcement. We sent you there and got you there beforehand. What, could you tell a difference in the mood and style of Northern Virginia versus New York, just on your observations when you were there?
Absolutely. Yes. When I was in Northern Virginia, I mean, it's really Washington, D.C. It's right across the Potomac. And the reception was either ambivalent or excited. Most people I talked to had kind of heard of it. They thought it would be good to bring those jobs. They didn't have very strong opinions. And then the folks in, you know, public policy, elected officials and economic development folks were very bullish about Amazon. They were stoked about it. In New York, the second I arrived, I stepped into a massive protest that had been organized by State Senator Michael Giannaris, who we'll probably talk about later as a very key figure here. And people from Queens were out there expressing a lot of concern, a lot of frustration. There was already some anti-Amazon graffiti on the ground, which is something that we've come to see a lot here in Seattle, Amazon's first home. But yes, there was a noticeable difference between the two locations that now seems very ominous of things to come.
So, in that way, though, would you have expected this? There was a report first in, I believe, the Washington Post and then the New York Times signaling this. Am I getting those two right?
I believe so.
Absent that, would you have expected Amazon to not go forward with the plans in such dramatic fashion? I mean, it seems like it's out of nowhere.
Yes and no. I mean, it did come as a shock today, certainly. Even after those reports, there was a lot of speculation that Amazon was just floating this idea that it might pull out of New York because it wanted to add some pressure to the officials who were fighting it. But it reminded me of something that happened in Seattle that was actually, when you think about it as a pattern, it's very in character for Amazon. So last summer, we spent a lot of time covering the head tax in Seattle, which was going to be a tax on big businesses to fund affordable housing. And a lot of people actually just called it the Amazon tax. Amazon, as you might expect, was very up in arms about this. And we started to hear some rumblings that they might actually slow their growth down in Seattle in response to this proposed tax. Now, on the one hand, that felt like something that, of course, Amazon would say because they want to add pressure to the political situation, and there's no way they're going to do that. But then they did. I mean, they paused construction on two of their buildings. So as these rumors were swirling about New York, I started to get a little bit of deja vu and remember that at the end of the day, Amazon does what it wants to do.
So essentially, in the same way that they were kind of floating in the community, this notion of stopping construction in Seattle in response to the head tax. Those reports earlier this week were very indicative of a trial balloon from Amazon to see how people would react to the notion of them not constructing this project in New York City.
Yeah, and I think it reflects this attitude from Amazon, which is that they bring high-paid jobs, that they are good for communities, and that they're not really getting the appreciation they deserve. So I definitely think that's been a sentiment expressed by Amazon in Seattle, and this tax that would target them made them very upset. And I think this is another example of them responding to a political discussion like, hey, why don't you appreciate us? If you don't appreciate us, then we're not going to give you the jobs.
Yeah. One thing that strikes me here is I think you're right, Monica. The parallels to Seattle are really interesting. And I think what they found is they got into New York and they found themselves in a similar political situation to what they had in Seattle, which is what they're kind of running away from here. And so I think that really struck them. So I actually wasn't surprised to see this, especially after the original reports, because I think, as you said, Amazon likes to call the shots and do the things that they want to do. And if they want to pull the plug on 25,000 jobs, they will happily do that and go invest elsewhere. So it didn't surprise me, especially as you mentioned with the head tax debate. They play hardball and they like to drive the bus.
That's right. But I think that this is going to become a losing battle for Amazon.
I agree. I don't think it's smart, but it's how they operate.
Right. Well, and when I think about Northern Virginia, that to me is much more of an outlier place that's more business friendly. But Amazon likes to grow in cities. It said that from the very beginning that it wants to be an urban company and hire the kind of employees who are young and crave that urban dynamism. And this is becoming an increasingly popular sentiment in cities, this kind of anti-corporate, a lot of frustration with the growing wealth inequality that we're seeing that's driven largely by the technology and finance sectors. And so I don't think Amazon's going to find a lot more places like Northern Virginia where it can just kind of call the shots and slide on in if that's really the type of workforce that they're hoping to attract.
Well, they could if they went to Columbus or Pittsburgh or Nashville. I think they would have been – I mean, those communities would have fallen over backwards for this. I think they ran into the New York juggernaut here.
Well, that was my first thought this morning. Amazon picked two urban areas. And yes, to your point, Monica, one is more business friendly and the other is New York. That said, if they had basically hedged their bets and picked someplace like Pittsburgh or Columbus or some other place that was a little bit smaller, a little bit more in need of them, New York does not need Amazon. And I think that is what the bottom line is here. And Amazon is turning around and saying, all right, then we don't need you, with a big middle finger stuck up. I mean, that's clearly, that is what this announcement is this morning. Not to put too fine a point on it, but it is a middle finger from Amazon to New York. You don't like us? We don't like you. See you later.
It is definitely that. But I think so I looked online today to see how many job openings Amazon already has in New York pre anything HQ2. It's 800. They have facilities there. And I think they do still need New York. They are not going to forego that rich talent pool just because they have their feelings hurt. But I think they're going to do it in a much more low-key way. And obviously, they're not going to get the same incentives that they were promised.
Right. And clearly, this was a lot of symbolism all around. HQ2 itself was ultimately a symbol more than it was a reality because it wasn't a full, equal second headquarters. Monica, one quick point that I want to make sure I'm clear on. The difference between the tax incentives in Northern Virginia and New York City. I know that Amazon was essentially trying to play a lot of these different communities off of each other, but my impression at least was that New York was in some ways a little bit more generous to Amazon from Mayor de Blasio and Governor Cuomo when it was making this offer than the Northern Virginia officials were because of the structure of the incentives. Am I right in that recollection?
That's right. Amazon was eligible for quite a bit more in New York between city and state incentives. It was up to $3 billion. But
maybe that's why people were more upset there.
That was my thought. Because if you compare those two incentive packages, it looks like Amazon was getting a sweeter deal from the politicians in New York.
I think that might be part of it, but it's also just such a different dynamic. I mean, being in Queens, which is a community that's gentrifying very quickly. There are a lot of people of color. It's a different dynamic than being in this kind of sleepy suburb of Washington, D.C., where there's more room to grow and more of an appetite for that kind of job creation.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, the other interesting thing here is what it means for Seattle as HQ1. And I've been arguing for a number of months here that I've thought the nexus of power of Amazon would shift to the East Coast as part of HQ2. And now I'm going to backtrack a little bit. I'm not so sure on that. I mean, I think with this pullout of New York, you're probably going to see more investment in Seattle as a result. And so it'll be interesting to see how Northern Virginia grows into a true HQ2. Maybe that really does become the epicenter of Amazon. But I don't know. It's 25,000 jobs that are going to have to go somewhere. Or maybe Amazon's looking at the economic winds ahead and saying, no, we're not going to grow as aggressively.
It's interesting, John. What you just said made me connect a dot to something that Monica and I have been talking about that she's been looking into related to Amazon's presence in Seattle Monica, is there any way to talk, because I know you're still working on that story, is there any way to talk about that as it relates to this?
That's a tease. Yeah.
I think that Amazon is still interested in growing aggressively in the Seattle region. I don't know if they're as interested in growing aggressively in Seattle proper.
I heard region emphasized there. Okay.
All right.
Interesting.
So that's interesting. Really interesting. Okay. Now, this to me is also indicative of some larger cultural trends that you've been talking about, Monica, and the ways that companies are finally being looked at with some degree of skepticism in a lot of communities. We're going to get into that right after the break. You're listening to a special episode of The Week in Geek talking about Amazon's decision to pull out of New York City with its HQ2 project. We'll be right back after a break.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back. It's Todd Bishop with Monica Nicholsberg and John Cook. We're talking about Amazon's decision to not proceed with its half HQ2 project in New York City. Monica, this plays into some larger trends that you've been discussing about sentiment toward companies in America. What are you observing on that front?
I think there's this really fascinating phenomenon that's happening right now that's the convergence of a few different things where kind of anti-corporate sentiment and a lot of frustration with the ultra wealthy is becoming a very mainstream part of the political conversation. That's led by some high profile people like Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Elizabeth Warren, the Democrats who are talking about wealth taxes and about really restructuring the economy so that it isn't the rules aren't written to just benefit the few. This, to me, feels like the first real-world consequence of that kind of sentiment playing out.
That's interesting. So what are the next steps? Does this mean now that anytime any company comes into a community with a demand for economic incentives that they're met with more skepticism than they were in the past?
We are starting to see some examples of that. Exxon was just rejected for some incentives in a way that I don't think you would have seen a few years ago. But this is also a unique situation. Amazon is one of the most valuable and powerful companies in the world, led by the world's richest man, coming into a very progressive community and asking for $3 billion in incentives. I mean, that's kind of a perfect storm, right?
Yeah. Big picture, here's where I am on this. I don't think Amazon comes out of this looking well at all.
No,
this
I agree.
This is a huge flop for Amazon. They spent, was it more than a year?
It was more than a year.
Looking for this place, they find it, and they didn't do enough due diligence during this process to know that they were going to face this kind of opposition. It feels slapped together. It feels like a last-minute decision. Clearly, they were trying to take on too much here in this corporate siting decision. And beyond that, once you're in it, you're in it. Stick with it for more than a couple months. I mean, what kind of company goes in, creates this kind of stir in an entire region, and then says, you know what? Never mind.
Tom, you're fired up on this.
We have spent so much time on this, spilled so many pixels on this story.
Well, it does. It's an important story, and I think we are what we've talked about many, many times here on the show about Amazon. We are seeing Amazon's true colors and their culture really come to bear in this example. So I think it is important. It's the most powerful company in the world, and you are seeing how they operate. We've seen this for many years in Seattle. The thing that has struck me on this is, when did Amazon start caring what other people thought of them? I mean, for 20 years here in Seattle, they gave the finger to the city and didn't interact with anybody here.
They didn't so
and
much give them the finger.
They just
here
didn't interact.
They gave them the cold shoulder.
The cold shoulder. Okay. That's better. Yes. And now all of a sudden, they are backing out of their plan. I mean, if history would speak here, what Amazon would have done, they would have gone into New York, they would have gone there, and they wouldn't have talked to anybody, and they would have just done it, and they wouldn't have cared. And they would, the protests would have gone on, and they would have just gone marched forward. So the fact that they are now caring and interacting, it speaks to a, you know, Amazon people are going to hate this, but it speaks to day two at Amazon.
Whoa. Oh, my God. Did you just go there?
I just went there.
I think that's true, though. We've seen a really dramatic shift from Amazon over the past few months, or maybe the past year. To me, it starts with HQ2, when they decided to come out from behind their walls and proclaim to the world, here's what we have to offer. What can you do for us? And it got so much engagement across the country and so many headlines that it was no longer effective for them to stay silent on some of these issues. And to me, what it's really about is recruiting, because a lot of these young people who are fired up about income inequality and incentives and these issues that we were talking about earlier are the same people that Amazon wants to hire to fuel their massive growth strategy.
But they're kind of bad at it. You know, they're kind of bad at managing.
At the hiring?
No, not at the hiring, but at the management of this public perception. And I mean, this is a perfect example. So,
yeah, Monica, am I overreacting to this? This to me just seems kind of immature. It seems really immature. And I know they're supposed to treat every day like day one, but that doesn't mean that you've never done anything before. You know, you got to.
Well, the thing that also strikes me, especially Monica, just kind of building off of your comments and this new perception of Amazon, this does dovetail into what we've seen with Amazon founder Jeff Bezos and his new persona that he's kind of taken on really in the last 2 years. And it's interesting how it parallels to the Amazon change. I mean, Bezos has come out. He's on Twitter all the time now. He's at the Oscars. He's hanging out with Russell Wilson.
Yeah, he's hiring an investigator to.
We can go down that path, too. That's a whole other can of worms.
Let's just see last week's episode.
Exactly. But it is interesting to see Bezos as the CEO of this company start to change his public persona and Amazon doing it at the same time. It just speaks to how closely connected Amazon is to its founder.
Yeah, and to your point, Todd, I don't think you're overreacting. I think I just went through this full emotional journey back when news broke that Amazon was going to split its second headquarters between New York and D.C. Because at that time, I was like, man, I have been spending a year talking about HQ2, 50,000 jobs, a completely transformed community that's going to get this project. Two 25,000-person offices are offices. They're not headquarters. And now one 25,000-person office, it just goes to show that this wasn't really what we were told or what we thought it was in the beginning. And now it's just a more interesting story.
Yeah, but the story's not over, and we're not sure how this is going to play out. There could be – who knows where this goes. I mean, I think you're right.
It's never going to be over. The story will never be over. I will be covering it for my entire career.
Yeah, that's probably true. That said, you know, Virginia – I think in your story, Monica, you mentioned that Virginia, in their agreement with Amazon, has said that they have capacity to go to 37,000 jobs. So this is part of what could happen is that Northern Virginia and Seattle get those jobs as a result.
Or Nashville.
Or Nashville. Yeah. Nashville goes to 10,000 employees.
That's essentially what they're saying.
Yeah.
And that's not new. So we reported on that back in when the November announcement came out. And it was actually true of both locations. New York and D.C. could go up to 40,000 employees, they said in their documents that they signed with those areas. But I think that their statement out today is telling. They said that they'll continue to grow organically across all of their offices, but really didn't say anything specific about adding jobs in Northern Virginia.
Which then
so
we're
we'll
getting
see.
Back to, like, why did they do this? I mean, it's back to almost like, we have a bigger office in Northern Virginia and we have all these other side. I mean, it's like we're back to where we started.
I'll tell you why they did it. People like us.
Talk about it.
And not just us, but we exemplify the fact that this has been a subject of conversation, not just here in Seattle, but around the country for the past year. If you say HQ2 to a well-read person in almost any city in this country, they're going to know what you're talking about. They know it's Amazon. It's one more way that Amazon is embedding itself, its brand, into the American psyche. That is what they've been doing.
Well,
there's
the
more to it than
they
that,
want
too.
Had about them, though? I mean, do you think they're happy with the discussion today?
Not now. Yeah. No, but I think when they started it, and they didn't know what they were getting themselves into, I think they definitely were planning to just burnish their brand. I mean, they could have just done essentially what they're doing and said...
Yeah. Well, where did Apple end up? In Austin with their second operation? And that was like all... I mean, you didn't even really know they were doing it. And they just, okay, we're in Austin and this is where we picked and we worked with them, with the city, and we're there and we're setting up and they're off to the races. without a huge distraction like this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's clearly spun out of Amazon's control, out of their hands, and this is not a very good look for them.
No, I agree. That's a good way to end this part of the discussion. I want to do a random channel, even though this is a special episode, because I got a couple things to talk about.
Okay.
We will be right back with a special installment of the Random Channel. You're listening to The Week in Geek on GeekWire. All right, welcome back. It's time for the Random Channel, that moment of the week when we talk about the random items we were buzzing about behind the scenes this week. John, I have one that can kind of be our shared Random Channel.
Okay, because I don't have any.
Okay, perfect. There is a home in Bellevue, Washington.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people talk about Seattle as Amazon's first home, but technically it was not Seattle. It was Bellevue, Washington on the east side in the suburbs. Jeff Bezos rented a house after driving here from New York with his wife, Mackenzie, and he based Amazon out of that house. It is now up for sale, and there is an historic artifact on the curb.
Are we sure it's still there?
I checked with the, I talked to the real estate agent.
Okay.
And I checked
with him. Good reporting.
And yes, indeed, the oversized mailbox on the corner is still there on the curb. And this,
so can we petition as GeekWire for this to be a national landmark?
John.
Can we do this?
I love how the best ideas that we come up with, because maybe this is the only time we really talk anymore.
This is the only time we talk. Let's do this.
I'm on it.
All right. So, not the house.
The
house. Just the mailbox.
Exactly.
So it's protected. And then the snowstorm hits and somebody, you know, wheels into it in their Volvo over there.
If you think about
it.
It'd be very easy for somebody to destroy this thing with like a mail truck.
Oh, my God. Somebody is going to go destroy this probably.
We should explain that the mailbox at this house is oversized because it needed to contain all the book catalogs that Jeff Bezos was receiving back when he was originally building the Amazon.com, the bookstore. I mean, imagine that. What a novel, modest idea.
And the house is going, it originally, it was priced at, what was it, $620,000 it sold for last time, and now it's selling for what, $1.4 million?
Almost $1.5 million. So it sold about a decade ago for about $600,000, and it's, you know, more than doubled in price over the past decade. And so,
and the real estate agent said they're not baking in additional pricing based on the historical importance of the house.
Exactly.
But you can imagine there are going to be multiple bids on this thing.
Exactly. And in fact, the pictures that go with the listing have a arrow that says, you know, birthplace of Amazon. Yeah. But he did say, I talked to him, and he said they made a conscious decision not to bake that in, as a premium in.
Well,
but the bidding could, well, create that.
Jeff Bezos lives nearby, and he's probably looking for a second home.
or a new home. Well,
he probably already has a second home.
He does in Washington, D.C. Yeah. He has one of the largest homes in the district.
Yes. So maybe he'll buy it and turn it into a hangout spot.
Yes. Would you put it on the National Register of Historic Places, or would you petition the city to turn it into
Let's do some research into this.
Okay.
And it would obviously be City of Bellevue, so maybe we can reach out to our contacts there and ask how we go about doing this.
Petitioning for it to be, okay, perfect. All right, I've got another one, actually,
are the random channel this week.
Yeah, you're so random.
I am extremely random. but do you have one, Monica?
I feel like we have to talk about the snow. I mean,
Boy, no, it's going to be all melded by the end of this.
All right, can I just do a quick PSA then?
All right.
So Seattle was gripped by a historic snowstorm this week, and I was just cracking up following along on Twitter all of the photos of empty grocery stores.
Yes.
Like it was the apocalypse, and everyone just cleared everything they possibly could out of grocery stores, which I think is kind of alarming because it means that Seattle only has like collectively like one day's worth of food at any given time. This is not my own joke. I've heard it. I heard it from John Scholes from the Downtown Seattle Association. But I just want to offer a tip, which I learned from my father, somebody who you absolutely would want around in an emergency.
In the apocalypse. Especially if there's zombies.
Yes, especially if there's zombies. But also, like, Seattle should be more prepared. We are waiting for a giant earthquake any day now. Anyway, the tip is just every time you're at the grocery store, get an extra can of something and put it in a closet, like, so that you just have non-perishables on hand in case of emergency.
Yeah, well, that is a good tip, basically, for the earthquake, not the snowpocalypse. But
You can eat canned goods in the snowpocalypse.
Well, that's true. But did you see, I'm just riffing off this for a little bit. Did you see the story in Willamette Week?
No.
This was hilarious. they had a story in Portland about how the grocery stores, there was a mad rush on kale. Like, kale sold out faster than anything else.
Are you sure this wasn't just an episode of Portlandia?
It was perfect Portlandia stuff. That's why it was such a hilarious headline. So that's my contribution. Todd, what's your final random channel item?
Final random channel also has to do with food, revisiting a topic that we've talked about in the past.
Don't get Monica going.
But yeah. With a new update, we interviewed Bill Gates a few weeks ago.
Awesome.
Now, if you recall, there was a viral photo of one of the world's richest people standing outside in line at Dick's Hamburgers in the Wallingford neighborhood in Seattle. It just took off. I think broke the story. Can we say
that? No, don't say that. No.
At any rate.
We posted the story.
He marveled at the fact that it went so viral, that so many people. So I got to talk to him about it. And actually,
amongst other things.
Yes. And if you missed the interview, you can go back in your podcast feed and catch it. And though I want to play here just highlights from what he had to say.
We've talked about a lot of divisive issues here today. You recently put yourself right square in the middle of one. Somebody got a picture of you standing outside of Dick's Hamburgers, waiting in line for a Dick's Burger. You are a longtime Burger Master fan. What do you say to people who would call you a burger flip-flopper?
I absolutely love both. I'll eat lots of different burgers at various times, but you know, my two stark favorites are Burger Master. I guess I'm not as photogenic when I'm sitting in my cars when I'm standing in a long line.
At Dick's, yes.
At Dick's, but you know, they're both pretty amazing. The one thing about Dick's, I will say, the fries are pretty good. It's hard to beat the Dick's fries.
All right, so that was Bill Gates talking about one of the biggest stories of the year so far, him getting a hamburger.
Celebrities, they're just like us.
It was fun. Yes. Although, sort of my Twitter back and forth with folks led me to a new idea. I think we should launch a new show, Billionaires on Bicycles Getting Burgers.
That is funny. I was saying, kind of riff off what Monica was saying.
That was
not funny. Yeah, yeah. It's
I
not
don't
funny.
Get it.
Yeah, I know what you're riffing off. But like, I love, what is it? It's like an Us magazine that they have celebrities.
They're just like us.
But yes. Could we do billionaires? They're just like us.
They're not, though.
Yeah. I do. Yes. Well, hey, Bill Gates gets a hamburger. I disagree. Yeah. I do think that would be a fantastic show with just Bill Gates going around to a bunch of different burger places and eating burgers, talking about the burgers, and then whatever issues.
He rides a bicycle?
Yeah, no, does he have to ride a bicycle?
So the bicycle was just for purposes of alliteration. So maybe it's Bill Gates getting burgers.
What about on the bus? You could take the metro. Yeah.
Billionaires on the bus getting. Nah. I just think the concept of him, because if you listen to that clip, I mean, he's an aficionado. He knows his hamburgers.
Yeah.
So, all right. That's all I got.
All right.
All right. Hey, just a quick note before we end. We're actually going to take a break from the Week in Geek next week, but in your podcast feed, you will hear a special interview of John Cook on a podcast that you recorded recently.
No, yes. No one wants to listen to
that. Yes, they do.
Oh, boy.
And you can check it out then. We'll also have a couple other special things.
And we should give a shout out. The GeekWire Bash is coming up. So get your tickets, geekwire.com/bash. We've got everything from ping pong to VR to a zip line to a lot of craziness going on. So join us March 7th at the GeekWire Bash.
At the CenturyLink Field Event Center, you can do that at geekwire.com/bash. All right. Good luck, New York, without Amazon. Are you going to survive? Is the Big Apple going to survive?
I have a feeling they might pull through this.
All right. Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm John Cook.
I'm Monica Nicholsberg.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the GeekWire podcast. Talk to you next week, everybody.